is now in talk mode.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Governor, you said there was terrific compliance with the DBR spot check surveys. Were all 200 of those businesses that were checked, everyone was in compliance? There was no violators?
That I don't know. I can't say, I don't know. I can find out. I don't know that they didn't see a single problem. But I check in with them every day, and sometimes there are issues. We have to have the fire marshal talk to somebody or state police. They didn't have to do that yesterday. They didn't see anything that was troubling to them, and they led me to believe that there was a high compliance. The only thing that they saw a lot of, which is a problem, is cars driving up to drive-through windows, and most of those people did not have masks on, so I wanted to get that message out.
Gotcha. Okay. Governor, this is Bethany from the EDU Local News. Happy Sunday, by the way. And when the schools reopen, are they going to be under new guidelines?
Hey, say it again, please.
When the schools reopen, are they going to be under new guidelines?
Absolutely. Definitely. Yes. I don't know exactly what they will be, but you can imagine the children will have to wash their hands on a very regular schedule. They might have to go to school in shifts so that there are never more than a certain number of kids in one classroom at one time. You can imagine the schools would have to be cleaned every day in a different way. There'll be many new restrictions. We're trying to figure that out now.
Perfect. Thank you for that.
Governor, last week, Governor Lamont released a list of every nursing home in Connecticut with the number of licensed beds, number of residents with COVID-19, number of COVID-19 associated deaths. Do you expect Rhode Island to make similar data available?
Hi, it's Dr. McDonald. I can tell you some of the data we have right now. Forgive me as I pull out my spreadsheet here. So right now we have 39 nursing homes with at least one case of COVID-19. And we have 21 nursing homes with at least two cases. You know, and as far as nursing home deaths goes, you know, they've regrettably been a large variety of it. I mean, of the total of 150 deaths, 113 are from nursing homes. So that's just a high-level view of that.
Who was that asking that question? Hello?
Sorry, go back, Governor. It was Ryan Delmore from what's happening.
Ryan Delmore. Can you tell me what the data was? Because I have no problem sharing more. Can you just say it again?
Sure. So it was a spreadsheet from Governor Lamont, and it showed how many licensed beds were in every single nursing home in the state. And then next to it showed the number of residents with COVID-19 in each nursing home in the state, even if it was zero, and then it showed the number of COVID-19 associated deaths among residents in each nursing home.
Yeah, so this is Dr. McDonald. I don't have the number of licensed beds on top of head. I do know there's about 7,100 nursing home residents in the state, and there's 85 nursing homes. But let's take that offline, and we'll see if we can work on that, okay?
I have no problem providing that. Just give me, like, the data and put it in the spreadsheet.
Thank you.
Question for Dr. McDonald. Doctor, this is John DeCicco. First of all, I liked your demonstration on the mask. I think it was important. But what's your reaction to the Boston homeless shelter? Close to 400 tested, almost 150 positive, but showing no symptoms. Is that the biggest hurdle with this whole thing, the amount of carriers that are not showing symptoms?
Hi, John. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm familiar with that. Interestingly, Dr. Marzani and Dr. Samuels had contacted me Thursday and shared that study result with us. So we're aware of it. We're actually working on testing of places like Harrington House and Amos House to kind of see what that looks like. But your larger question is, asymptomatic carriage is an issue. And obviously, that's something that we haven't had enough testing capability yet to do the surveillance we'd like to. So I kind of said that earlier, we're going to start doing surveillance with nursing homes. I mean, I got a text from Joe Wendelkin that it actually has started already. But I think it gets to that larger issue of why is it so important to wear your mask? And it really gets that message is it's our duty to protect others from ourselves because we can't tell. And I think this gets to those large issues about why the hand sanitizer is so important, why soap and water is so important. And I think it's if we can do these personal hygiene issues, these mask issues, they sound old-fashioned, but they do work. And, you know, one little fine point on hand sanitizing might kill the virus, that's what it does, but soap and water washes it off. And, you know, keep in mind, viruses are really, really small. And, you know, our hands, you know, they're just very small. But it's like, think of it this way. If you're in a mountain chain and you're trying to wash off a tulip at the bottom of that mountain chain, that's what soap does. It, you know, the soap just lifts up the tulip and you wash it away. So you got to give yourself 20 seconds. Let that soap just sit there and just work around it and then wash that tulip away. And that's, I just gave you that analogy because viruses are so, so small that if you leave just a several on there, you still pose a risk to others. So I don't know if that makes sense to you, but it's part of why hand washing, it should be as abstract as it is, but I just want to make it pragmatic of why we really need people to do it.
It does, Doctor. And just a quick follow-up on that. I am getting asked by people that the weather's getting warmer. Could someone, what we know about the virus, if I went into a swimming pool and someone had it or was contagious, could I pick it up from that or a hot tub or a jacuzzi or the ocean, or is it so small that it would die off, so that's not something to worry about?
Yeah, so when you're in a pool, a commercial pool in particular, as long as the pool is chlorinated, which it really should be, the virus won't live in chlorinated water. Where I worry more about, though, is when you go to the pool, kids go in the water, adults generally sit in the side of the pool, right? So what I'm worried about more is the adults sit in the side of the pool, and then they're sharing their common objects. And what I mean by a common object is, the way I look at every object I have is, I assume the object I'm holding in my hand, whether it's a pen or paper, that it's got virus on it. And then when I hand it to someone else, I expect them to sanitize their hands. What I worry about more is, people having those common objects they share, whether it's towels, whether it's where they sat on the chaise lounge, whether it's a beverage. And as far as the ocean goes, I don't think you're going to see the virus living in ocean water, but again, when people are at the ocean or at the sand, I'm hoping you know they're at the beach having a good time, but you're sitting on the sand, it's the common objects, and what's going to happen to us there is it's the crowding that will occur, and that's where we need to be really careful. And so, you know, I think one of the new normal things is when you go to the beach, in addition to your sunscreen, you bring your hand sanitizer, and you use it pretty frequently.
And Governor, your hair looks fine, but since growing up in Cranston, we were taught that a hair salon's an essential business.
I'm right there with you, John.
I think if you polled that, I'd like to see that poll amongst Rhode Islanders. I think you'd be up in the 90% range.
You get yes for me.
Could you guys provide an update on how the hospitals are holding up? The hospitalizations went down a little bit. There's still a few dozen people in the ICUs. How are the hospitals doing? What do they need? What are you hearing from hospital leaders on how they're handling this?
I want to say an overview, but the doctor needs to answer that. I want to say thank you because our hospitals have been such good partners and collaborators, and I can't tell you how lucky I feel for that. Second of all, hospitals are struggling right now. You know, we made a decision in concert with them, and it was a decision that every governor made, CDC urged us, to ask hospitals to stop non-critical surgeries. That's a real revenue problem for hospitals. So I'll let Dr. McDonald answer the question I think you're asking. But as I think about things that I need to work on, hospitals need financial relief, and I need to figure out a way to help them get back into the business of reopening some of their non-critical surgeries because they, frankly, they need that financial stability.
So this is Dr. McDonald. So we do track every day the 9 acute care hospitals in Rhode Island, what their capacity is, how many ICU beds they have open, how many regular beds they have open, those floor beds. We do track, in particular, their ventilator capacity as well. So right now, of the 9 hospitals in the state, all of them have capacity, and no one's bursting at the seams right now. There are quite a few people in the hospital from COVID-19, but I think, like, what Governor Raimondo said, it's really important. It's a lot of what drives hospital usage is that non-emergent surgery. And if you just think about that, when you have your hip replaced or your knee replaced, you're going to be in the hospital for a couple of days. And whether no matter what surgery you're having, you end up in the hospital for a period of time. So I think part of why we have the capacity we have, which is what we need as we're anticipating the surge, is we have postponed all this, you know, non-emergent surgery. So right now, people are in a decent location. Just want to throw this out, though, that the surge hospitals are coming along nicely. I was at the Rhode Island Convention Center Hospital Friday night. I was at the Citizens Bank Hospital, the old Citizens Bank one, Saturday night. I've looked at both of them. There's beds there. There's gurneys. There's staff that are getting ready to work there. There's construction crews right now, but there's negative pressure set up in these places. It's very impressive. What I saw was very impressive. I'm very pleased with what I saw. You know, I'm a regulator, so I want to go make sure that these are hospitals that are going to be safe for our people, and they will be.
This is Dan McGowan from the Globe. Actually, Dr. McDonald, just to follow up on that, is there a scenario where potentially these field hospitals won't actually be used? Obviously, I'm sure that's the ideal thing, but are you guys still sort of fully on board with the idea that they will eventually get used?
Yeah, so Dan, it's a fair question. So, you know, the governor often says prepare for the worst and hope for the best. And I think that's still a good motto. What I liked when I went down to the Lifespans Man's at Rhode Island Convention Center Hospital, and I liked what I saw at Karen Williams Hospital, was they're prepared to use these places. And that's what I wanted to see, was they were ready to do this. The possibility exists, though, that because the social distancing happened so early in Rhode Island, because the interventions, you know, were so methodically thought out, that we may not need them. So that is a possibility. We'll have to wait and see. Time will tell.
Thank you.
Doctor, the various mathematical models have been diverging. So you have, say, the IHME model going down, which is a non-traditional model, and the London School of Economics model going pretty stable, which is a traditional model using traditional inputs. Has the state been continually reevaluating what its model is in terms of likely accuracy, and where do we stand on that? What are your thoughts on that? This is Michael Billoker, Motif.
Oh, hi, Michael. We are looking at all the models, and Dr. John Fulton, who's a PhD at the School of Public Health in Brown, sent me a copy of the model we're looking at Rhode Island last night. It does look like, you know, what he had said in his model was that folks have been looking at is that it looks like 600 hospitalizations have been averted so far, maybe 150 deaths have been averted so far. These are models, you know, and we use models to help us guide things. But right now, things are heading in the appropriate direction. So we're keeping an eye on this very closely. But all the models are out there. We look at all of them.
Doctor, could we just get a breakdown of today's deaths, how many were at nursing homes and which nursing homes?
Sure. So of the 13 deaths, 11 were associated with nursing homes. 3 were at Orchard View. 3 were at Stillwater. 1 was at Golden Crest. 1 was Oakland Grove. 1 was at Riverview. 1 was at Elmhurst. And 1 was at Scalabrini Villa. So that's all the ones I know about.
We have time for one more question. Doctor, this is Kim Kalunian. We're hearing about a new cluster of cases at Summit Commons, I believe. Are there any new clusters of nursing home cases that you could tell us about?
Kim, not that I know about right now. I mean, I'll have to just, you know, wait till we can learn more about that and get back to that tomorrow.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.